Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on episode 279 of Wheel Bearings, we've got cold weather EV driving and charging with the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the Lucid Air Touring, and the Mercedes-Benz EQB. The IRS is going to make it a little bit easier to get a tax break on a new EV in the early part of 2023. California bans manufacturers from selling full self-driving that isn't. Ram applies for a trademark on the 1500 REV, and don't overload your pickup truck. This is episode 279 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam McGrawl, Sam is from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin. I'm going to say from the Walk Around podcast. I was a guest on their podcast and had a really fun time. It's a fun little podcast.
I'm not familiar with that one.
There are a couple guys and we talked about all sorts of stuff about how vehicles are doing and where the market is heading. And yeah, the Walk Around. It's fun. Google that one, guys. It's a fun little podcast. And the guys were really cool and sent me this nifty little speaker to say thanks. So I was like, oh, I got a little parting gift for my participation. But it was fun, they do a lot of dealer-related stuff, but they talk a lot about how the industry is going and what's happening and what consumers need to know about cars and how automakers and dealers can make it less painful to buy a car.
They could stop acting like dealers.
Well, yeah, there's that. They still are dealers. So it was a really fun podcast. It was a cool bunch of guys.
I'm Roberto Baldwin, and I'm from Engadget this week. I did a lot of videos.
Went off on a tangent before Robbie.
Yeah.
I know. Robbie's like, wait, it's my turn. Sorry.
Where am I? What's happening? Initially, when you said walk around, it's just like walking around. Like, hey, I went to a place and I walked around. I'm like, oh, no, car walk around. Again, I just do my...
Well, I didn't actually walk around a car. It's just like the walk
around. That's the name, what the name means. But in my 8-7, getting up at 7 a.m. brain...
Oh, you poor California boy enjoying your warm weather, but getting up at 7 a.m.
It's not warm weather. It's raining and cold.
What's cold?
Actually, it's
like 50. Cold, Robbie?
It's not cold today. It's like 50 degrees. Today is
okay.
Nice.
Okay, so really, about cold. I'm air quotes, cold.
Yeah. But again, we don't have any insulation in our homes here.
Oh, poor Robbie.
So if it's 31 outside, it's 32 inside. And I've been to the East Coast. Y'all have like crazy things. Heat's great because it just dissipates into the outside world.
I can get no sympathy for you. My face is like freezing off right this time of year. Like I walk outside, it's like my face hurts. It's so cold. So no.
Yeah, but you have to go outside to freeze. I'm inside my house and there's like that. It looks like I'm smoking.
You can see your breath. Is that the phrase you're looking for?
You can see your breath in our house. It's a very... People always will make fun of San Francisco because like, oh, it's cold here. And they're like... And then they'll come and visit.
It is.
And they'll be they're like, what is going on? Why? It's only 40 degrees. Why is it so cold? I'm like, well, you get the water off the bay. The Pacific Ocean is very cold. And also, we don't have any insulation in our homes.
I think the next time you say that it's cold and you try to make me sympathetic from New Hampshire, I'm going to walk outside in the blizzard and be like, here's your cold, Robbie. Here's cold. There you go. Now shush.
I lived in Kansas City where it was negative 45 all winter.
Oh, see, that's cold.
I could go inside and it was so damn hot because I'm so used to being super cold no matter where I'm at. If it's cold outside, it's cold inside. You put a blanket on. So when I go to the East Coast and they're like, oh, it's so cold. And you get inside and it's like it's like 70 degrees in the house. I'm like, what is wrong with you people? It's too hot. Sorry.
The cold weather has left us for now here in Michigan. It was in the single digits last weekend. And now it's 52 degrees outside and raining. And in fact,
that's lovely.
The 10-day forecast, it's supposed to be 62 next Tuesday.
What?
On January 4th. January 3rd.
Oh, my gosh.
Seems ill-advised. Yeah. Oh, it's 56. It's no wonder it's warm outside. It's 56. It's warm. That's shorts weather.
It is shorts weather.
It's going to be warmer here in Michigan than it's going to be in Las Vegas next week when I'm there for CES.
Las Vegas is, that's just really desert cold.
The desert does get cold in the winter.
It does. Yeah, you don't think of the desert as being cold, but it, even when it's not winter, in the evenings, it can get really cold in the desert.
Yeah.
So we've now pivoted the Will Barron's podcast to a weather podcast.
It's a weather channel. It's the weather channel, and we'll be more accurate than the actual weather channel. So, you know.
We hope.
Let me talk to you about rain.
All right. What have you been driving, Robbie?
So I've been driving a car in the cold. No.
Oh, my God.
So I had the Lucid Air Touring this past week. I think I mentioned I was getting it last week. I don't know. I mentioned the Lucid Air Touring.
You did.
Previously that I was getting it because someone had asked about the rear, what are those, chairs? Seats?
Seats.
Rear seats.
Again, it's early in California for Robbie.
So they're asking about how the seats went down so they could go skiing. So it is a 60-40 split in the back. There is a pass-through in the center seat. I always want to put air quotes around seat because it's not for adults. It's for very skinny children. So, you know, you pull
seating
down.
Seating position.
Yeah. So there's a little hole. So you could put a couple pairs of skis through there. Maybe not a snowboard. But if you do the 60-40 split and you have children, you just put one in the middle, one on the edge, and then you have that whole other side over there for your skis or your snowboard or whatever. And, of course, that depends on how big your gear is. So that was the – someone asked that question before. Having said that, it is it's still a Lucid Air. It's, you know, it's less expensive than the Grand Touring and the Grand Touring Performance and the Sapphire. But it's still a very nice luxury EV. It's really nice to drive. It's very smooth, very powerful. The chassis is worked out really well. I've talked to the chassis team over there, like, I don't know, 50 times it feels like at this point. It has an EPA rating of 424 to 425 miles from an 88 kilowatt hour capacity pack, which is really efficient. That said, Lucid does the same sort of EPA testing that Tesla does. So whereas most people, you're going to get that in the real world, you'll probably get a little bit lower than that driving around. I did my test. It was very cold. It was like 35, 39 on the day I was doing the test. I don't warm the cars up. I just get in and drive because that's what people do. And I got 308. I had the 20-inch wheels, so that brings the range down to 385, and then I got like 3 something or other. Let me look at my note real quick. Sorry. I know.
So between the cold and the up early, he's a mess.
You lose some range with that smaller battery pack. You do also get the foot garage, though, right?
Yes. So with the 20-inch wheels, it goes down to 384 miles. In my test, we got 325 miles. I got 325 miles of range out of the pack. Again, cold day, so that's what's going to happen. And again, that they're using the different EPA testing than other people. It has it's the the slowest Lucid Air you can get right now. Zero to 60 in 3.4. Yeah, 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. 620 horsepower.
Unacceptable.
Anything
over 3 seconds is unacceptable.
Garbage.
Unacceptable. But even with the big wheels and the cold and the cold air or the cold range run, it got 3.7 miles per kilowatt, which is pretty good. They say it'll do over 4 per kilowatt, you know, and that's obviously in, like, you know, a nice day, the wind resistance, you know, that EPA test. I still think the infotainment system needs to do 2 things at once. It's especially when you're doing that drive and you're like, oh, I want to see the map and I want to, like, be able to control my music or see the music. I mean, you still control it with the steering wheel, but for some reason, like, seeing it and having 2 things on the display, and there's 2 displays, that's the weird thing. Having 2 things on the display, one is media and the other is navigation, just seems, I don't, it's, It just seems very important. I don't know why, but it is. It's very important for some reason in my brain. I think it's important in other people's brains. That top display is just, you know, a few little things. The bottom display, you could do so many things, and it's pretty intuitive. I'm like, oh, where's the – oh, it's right here in the openings. There's like just the openings, charging. Where do I do it? Oh, it's in charging. And then you go, oh, I need to find something in the vehicle. Oh, vehicle. Oh, it's right there. It's – yeah, there's a lot of things you can do. It's with the infotainment system. They've also sped it up. I think I've talked about before, where they essentially just hired a bunch of people from Apple and other Silicon Valley software companies, and said, "Hey, make this better," and they did. And so it's the seats are a bit the front seats aren't quite as plush as you would find in EQS. But driving around, they actually ended up being comfortable. I was like, oh, these seems a little not as squishy as a luxury vehicle. But when after driving for the 3 hours it takes to do a range run, I was like, oh, these are actually quite nice. The rear seats are actually far more comfortable than the front seats. They feel a little squishier. They feel a bit more plush. And yeah, they have that footwell because they have the smaller battery pack. So they've removed some of the battery right where your rear feet go, so you don't have that your feet kind of up in the air thing that you have in the Grand Touring. You have more headroom in the back of a Lucid Air Touring than you have in, say, an EQS sedan. One of the issues with the EQS sedan is that it doesn't have a lot of headroom in the back for tall people, just based on the shape, which is why I think if people are looking at EQS and they're concerned about, and they're tall and they're concerned about rear space, they should probably get the EQS SUV. Overall, $107,400, so it's still not cheap. Ooh. They still have the yeah. But it's cheaper than the other ones. They have I believe they are delivering Pures right now, or they're going into production with the Pures.
They announced that they were starting some deliveries of Pures. Maybe not very many, but I think they are delivering them.
Yeah. So it's and that one starts at $87,400 for the rear-wheel drive version, which will not be available at launch. Instead, you have to get the all-wheel drive version, which adds $5,500, which is like $90,000. That said, even if I've sat in the Pure, it's not quite as luxurious, but it's still, you're still getting that nice Lucid Air sort of minimalism. It's very much like a Swedish minimalism when it comes to luxury, even though they're going after the German automakers. It's just a nice car, and because the packaging, the chassis, everything, they have the giant frunk, where you open it up and there's a nice flung, and then you lift up the little false bottom and there's a big hole so you can stick I had a small cooler, but I could stick a cooler in there if I wanted to. You could tailgate with the Lucid Air. It's got a nice size trunk, and the way that the back opens is very interesting.
You have a really big opening to pack stuff in there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really a sedan. It's not a hatchback, but the way it opens is like you have all this room to get your stuff in and out. So that's really nice. And then, of course, underneath that, there's also some more room where you can put some more stuff. The packaging of the vehicle, the drivability, the luxury, the comfort, the speed, the performance, it handles really well. It's a sports sedan, wrapped in a luxury sedan package. Overall, yeah, Lucid Air Touring, they should just need to keep doing what they're doing is what when it comes down to it. Again, them and Rivian, Lucid and Rivian both came out as really great cars at the worst possible time. So hopefully everything will work out for both those automakers. Lucid is a luxury brand. Don't expect anything, don't expect like a $30,000 EV from them at any point. But everything.
Although,
that they do.
Peter Rawlinson, the CEO, has said that they do plan to introduce more affordable vehicles in the future. Their next product is going to be an SUV, the Gravity, coming in 2024, and then they're going to start moving down market.
Yeah, but I think it'll be like a BMW situation.
More, yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll get like a 3 Series type or an A-Class type of Lucid. So it'll be less expensive, but it's not going to be, you know, a Hyundai Kona.
You don't think they got a Kona-priced Lucid somewhere hiding there?
Yeah. You never know.
I mean, they are very, especially Peter, they're very proud of their efficiency and what they're doing. And to be honest, he actually prefers a less expensive vehicle. He's like, when you talk to him, he's like, I actually like this nice cheaper one.
Yeah.
But he knows that the market. He's like, well, you know, if you got to do you sell the big expensive ones, so you get the money, so you can buy the less, you can make the less expensive ones. I mean, everyone's been doing that forever, so it makes sense that people will be doing that with EVs. But yeah, 60-40 split. I forget who asked. Somebody asked.
But you answered their question. Whoever you are.
Look at that. I am delivering content for our listeners. So. Person who is looking at
listening to the voice of the customer.
The voice of the customer. Oh my God.
Off in the darkness, just whispering in my ear. Hey, can I put skis in the back of this? I'm like, yeah, sure.
Somebody tell me, I need to ski with this. Help.
But if you are going to go skiing with the Lucid Air, make sure you get a set of winter tires.
Oh yeah, get some winter tires.
That's just I feel like that's just our perpetual tip. If you're going to go anywhere where there's snow, what's the answer? Tires. Winter tires. We just want to make sure you guys, if you haven't heard us say that 800 times, we'll say it an 801st
time.
You
don't want to put chains on a Lucid Air. Come on.
No,
definitely not. Ugh. You don't want to risk, damaging that bodywork around the wheel well.
I know, that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, oh my God, you would, that beautiful car, and you would, if the chain, oh no, don't do that.
Yeah, I think that's why they have the people on the side of the road in California when you go up to the mountains. If you don't have all-wheel drive, they'll make you put chains on. Uh-huh. And there's people who just line up and be like, I'll put chains on for $40. I feel like that's the best $40 you're going to spend.
That's done it 1,000 times.
Right, yeah, I'll do this for you. Okay.
Yeah, I know how to do this. I got this. And I'm like, what do I do? I put chains on exactly once while snowboarding with a friend in his car. And I was like, no, this is stupid. I don't know why we didn't take my car. I can't remember. There was a reason why we took his car instead of my WRX. But yeah.
I presumably know how. I've seen it. I've watched it. But I don't think I've ever put chains in a car. Because everything I've ever owned has been either all-wheel drive and or snow tires. So, and I've never been like to a mountain pass that requires it. I don't know that there's any place on the East Coast where you have to have either chain. I don't think I've, and I've been up in the White Mountains during the winter, which would be about as mountainy as it gets around here. I don't know that I've been on a road.
It's a situational thing. Yeah. Where, California, like most people don't have snow.
That's
like most
true.
Of the state doesn't have snow. And then when you do get snow, their roads are already treacherous. They're already like windy and narrow.
Yeah.
And so, we kind of need that. So people just don't go shooting off into.
Shooting like, should have put on those chains.
Should have put on those chains. Where I grew up, they would just close the road before they would ask for chains. The road gets so bad.
We need chains. Finally, shut it down.
Forget it. Just shut it down.
So, Nicole, did you drive anything this week?
I had the same car I had last week, which is the Mercedes EQB. I get it for a 2-week loan during the holidays. That's how it works. Up here for the holidays.
Because the fleet company there doesn't want to work during the break?
I guess, and everybody needs a little break. So I'm like, you guys enjoy a little break and I'll enjoy the car. It's not the worst car to have for 2 weeks. I'll survive.
It's a nice little EV. It's a nice we just took a gas car and we made it an EV and it's an EQB. Here you go.
So I did have a few additional thoughts having driven it now.
Ooh, it's a long-termer. Like, it's your long-termer now.
It's my long-term loan, yeah. So first of all, we had some, like, not heavy snow, but a little bit of light snow, and the temperature dropped. The door for the charging port, first of all, it's a pain in the butt to open. It doesn't like to pop open. But then even inside, you have to pull. It's not hard. I don't want to make it sound like it's hard, but there's like a little latch you pull, and then the interior door pops open so that you can plug in your cable. It froze. I couldn't get the little interior one. The one that hasn't actually, whatever moisture got near there from it being a little snowy and rainy, literally the little interior one. So I have the metal part of the door, door open, but the little black plastic part that covers the actual plug inside, I'm pulling the little thing and it's not opening. Yeah, do you know what? You know,
I feel like they should know that because they sell these things to like people in Switzerland, which is really right down the road from Germany.
Practically the same. So like it opens up like the metal one. I'm like, pump, pump. Okay, finally pops open. Then I'm like, I can't get it. And so then I pop it and it's stuck. So I'm like, I don't. Does one punch the Mercedes? Okay, punch, 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 punch. And I have how do I break the little Mercedes. Ice seal that somewhere? How hard do I smack this with my hand before I crack this plastic? Aww. So it was a little tricky, and it happened probably like 3 or 4 times since I've been charging. So it's not like a one-off. Yeah, really weird. And
it's enough condensation where it freezes.
Right, because it hasn't been like, 10 below zero. We've had temperatures from probably 12 degrees up to like 50. But when it gets down to that 12 and the teens there and the teens, it did not like opening. It was like, no, you should not be going out right now. Don't charge your car. So that was tricky. Also, here's a weird thing that I never. So we have one charger at our house and two cars that can use them because one's a plug-in hybrid and one's now we have this EV. So we're kind of switching back and forth as we're charging during the week because we just have the one cable. But the Mercedes is set so that you have to have your key near with you in your pocket, and then you have to push a little button, and then it releases.
On
the car. There's a button that's actually in next to the little door that was freezing. Mm-hmm. There's a little button there, and you have to have a key fob. So my husband, it was a weird, frustrating thing. If he just wanted to, like, he came home and he had used his car and he wanted to plug it in and charge it, has to go inside, get the Mercedes key, come outside, unlock the Mercedes, plug in his car. Because you can't do it unless the key's in your pocket, which I get from the, like, okay,
the rest
now
of the world. Because people, people were unplugging other people's cars for, like,
But in terms of, like, if you have two EVs in your driveway and you're not always carrying two giant key fobs in your pocket, you got to go get the key fob for the car that you don't want to drive so you can swap the cable from one car to the other.
This is where you need the phone as a key, and have your phone paired to all the
vehicles. Yeah, just have your
That's
phone.
What you'd have to do. Yeah. So it was like, that was kind of a pain in the neck. And the third thing that was, and I do have positive things, but the third thing that's kind of funny is, like, obviously no one's allowed to drive the press car except for me for the rules of Mercedes. But sometimes if we're blocking each other in, my husband will move the car to the right to get it out of his way. Or my husband, then once again had that moment of like, how the heck do I shift this thing? It was shifting. My daughter, who is 20, sat behind it just to move it, and she comes back in. She's like, I can't move it. I can't get this to move. I don't know what's happening. She couldn't get the right combination of like shift the gear shifter, put the brake. It kept giving her messages. And when I sat down, I'm like, what'd you do? You broke the Mercedes? How did you? It would not recognize. I don't know what weird combination of like pressing the brake and then trying to put it in drive she did. But it's like, no, you must press the brake pedal. And I'm
you messed it up too many times. We're going to lock you out for
it was
an hour.
Right. I was like, I am pressing the brake pedal, Mercedes. It is firmly pressed. It's like, nope, nope, nope. And I had to turn it off, turn it back on again like it's a computer, which I guess technically now it is, right? And then redo the whole thing. But it got so confused by whatever she did with the combination. It was like, I'm out. Not but doing
this. No, you know what? You shouldn't be allowed to drive.
You shouldn't be allowed to move this car 5 feet forward and 5 feet back.
It's made a decision, and the decision is your daughter shouldn't be allowed to drive.
The AI was like, you are not worthy of moving me 5 feet in the driveway to get to the other car.
I don't know what you're going to do once you get me in gear. I don't know.
Anything could happen. I'm not risking that. Right. No. It's like, you're out. But the one of the things that I did discover that I actually really kind of liked that I thought was kind of neat is when it's charging, once you get it plugged in and you have it charging, because I didn't notice it until I really like plugged it in at night and suddenly you can really see what's glowing. All the ambient lighting in the car is very visible if you're just standing right outside of it, that everything glows green when it's plugged in and charging properly. So you see this big green glow across the dashboard and there's a display on the instrument cluster and everything. Even it's like, green, I'm charging, green, I'm charging. And it has a percentage and you can see everything just glancing in. So it's a really good way to make sure, like, to see just how far you need to charge and to see that, in fact, it is charging. I thought that was pretty nifty. And the one time I didn't quite get the plug in right, and I could see that it was yellow because there's also an indicator right by where you plug it in, but even the inside is yellow. Like, nope, you don't have this right. You don't have this right. You don't have
this right.
No matter
where you're looking at the car, it tells you.
It's like, you have made a mistake. Yes.
Things are going horribly wrong.
I did like the green lights, but the door, I found that the door thing was probably, it's a little finicky in the cold, which surprised me.
Yeah, it's probably maybe the it's too the where it slides in, it's too thin. Maybe it should be a little bit wider.
I don't know.
Send the thing in Mercedes that way. If it's a little wider, it'll be a little bit tougher for it to freeze.
Maybe, yeah, because it was because like I said, it's not like we've had blizzard conditions. We had some rain. There was dampness in the air, and I guess there's just enough, like you said, enough moisture and condensation that just stuck to that door that it would not open. And I literally was like pop, 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 trying to break it open because I couldn't unplug it in the morning. The one morning it was frozen in, and I'm like, okay, now I feel like I'm driving a hydrogen vehicle. I can't get it unplugged. It's like stuck
700
there.
700 pounds, yeah. Frozen.
I'm like, come on, I just want to drive. So yeah, one time it wouldn't let it open.
You
to
get a blow dryer out.
I know, blow dry the thing, right? So a couple times I couldn't get the door open, and the one time I couldn't get the plug out, I'm like, this is ridiculous. So,
well, do they need to put a little heater on the? Just
I don't know,
just,
but
just to
seemed
keep it at 33 degrees. That's all it has to do.
I don't know. But so that was my experience. I do have a funny experience to share, though, because we're all driving EVs, and my husband has rented an EV. He is currently in Florida and visiting my daughter, and he rented a Polestar, and he's all excited about renting this Polestar that apparently when he got it had, they had not fully charged it. It only had like 100 miles of charge on it, and he didn't know exactly where he was going or exactly how far, like, and doesn't know where everything is, right? So he's like, okay, I got to find a charging station because I'm not quite sure what's working, what's available.
Hey, who did he, was this Avis?
I want to say it was probably. Hertz. I think
Hertz,
it was Hertz.
Oh, it's Hertz. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Hertz has a bunch of Polestars.
Come on, Hertz. Tesla's.
Yeah, and I'm like, you couldn't fully charge the vehicle before you handed it off? So anyway, and he's not panicked. He's like, well, I'll just stop here. There's this one that says it's on the side of the road here. I'm going to go to this one. I'm going to charge that up, and it'll give me a little extra charge, make sure I get where I need to go, and he gets
what
there.
What could possibly go wrong?
The entire charging station, all three or four chargers, is under construction. So he's like, okay, can't use those. Then he's like, oh, wait, there's this other one that's over here that's supposed to be accessible from the parking lot of this convention center. And the convention center is not having a convention, but it's supposed to be accessible for people to use from the parking lot. So he goes to the convention center, and the parking lot has extra gates up and is entirely gated in this one area. And you know what's in that area?
Chargers.
The chargers. So
they're probably like 7 kilowatt chargers,
right?
Too, because
so
it's at a
like,
convention center.
Right? And he's like, are you kidding me? And he was trying to like do a work phone call from the car. And he's like, yeah, so I thought I would like charge things up and get everything ready and be at my... She's like, I'm not. Instead, I'm sitting in the car like, sorry, guys, I'm trying to charge my vehicle. I'm in a parking lot.
They're going to hand out like cars, Hertz needs to, A, charge them. B,
right?
give you like a list of like here are nearby charging stations.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same as a gas car. I mean,
no.
Once you do it, you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. But you're giving these cars to people who probably don't own any. If they own an EV, then
no
you're
idea.
Like, fine. They kind of get the. But you're going to have a lot of people who don't own EVs, and this is like their first chance, like
right?
Driving an EV. And Hertz is just like, whatever, man. Here's a car with 30 miles of charge. Figure it out.
And like
and
was
the thing
fine.
Is, they, you know, they never rent you a gas car without a full tank of gas in it.
That's just it. Like you get a gas car, you get a full tank of gas, and then you have to return it with a full tank or pay roughly $800 per gallon for them to fill it up for you, right? So, but I guess you don't have to return it with a full charge. And my husband's like, I am not returning this with a full charge. I'm like, okay, you do what you want.
I have rented a few cars recently that don't have a full tank of gas. So that's actually worse because now he's like, oh, I got to figure out how to get 3/4 of the tank because I'm not giving them extra gas.
Right, you're not giving it. You're like, I'm not. You're
like, oh, no.
So much per gallon. I am not giving you a single ounce of gasoline.
Yeah, so I'm like at the gas station like, start putting gas, stopping, turning the ignition on, looking. I'm like, oh, I can put another gallon in there. All right, how far do I have to go? Like 10 miles? Okay, we're good. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a pain in the butt when they don't give you the full.
So he was really surprised because what he thought was, his original thought was, whatever the range was, I don't even know what the range is in the Polestar, but he's like, I should have enough that if I just drive this where I need. Okay, so if I drive this where I need to go and drive around, I'm going to be totally fine. I'm not even going to need to charge it. But then he was kind of like, oh, I'm sort of on the edge here. And because I don't know where everything is and I don't know, like, which ones are under construction, kind of taking my left in my hand, so I better charge it up. He's like, and lo and behold, I proved my point where I can't get to the first two charges I go to.
I'm curious if you know, did he try using Google Maps in there to search for chargers? Because, you know, Google Maps and Android Automotive in there – actually, even just the regular Google Maps on your phone, you can search for EV chargers, and it will pull them up and show you where they are, and in most cases even show you what the maximum power.
Well, he did search. I can't remember how he searched, but the thing was, it didn't tell him that they. I mean, you can't see that it's not working.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
So like, he searched to find the ones he found. He's like, oh, there's one here. I'll try this one. Under construction, like literally they were doing construction. It wasn't like they were just like random repair. Like clearly they're upgrading them or something. Like you said, it looked like they were doing something because all of them were sort of being worked on. Yeah. Second one, cordoned off. But again, you can't see that in the app. You don't, like when you Google it, you're just like, oh, there's one right here. I'll go there. Oh, nope. There's one right here. I'll go there. So it wasn't a huge big deal. He eventually found one, you know, he's not in the middle of nowhere. He's in Orlando. He's going to find an EV charger.
Might as well be in the middle of nowhere.
I know, right? But he did find, but it was still one of those, like, he got the vehicle with less charge than he expected. He couldn't immediately find one. He's like, if this is my first experience. He was laughing about it because he's not panicked about driving something that has
a
plug.
But he's been around you long enough, you know.
Right. It's not, he's like,
the same thing.
Right. He's like, I've had this happen before. But if, like you said, Robbie, if you'd never driven an EV, you're like, let's give it a go. Let's get one when we're on vacation. Oh, my God, I only have 100 miles.
And then your first experience is, you know, driving around convention center.
Trying to find a charging station that's been gated off. Yep.
Yeah, it's
even worse, you know, if you arrive somewhere after dark, you know, someplace you don't know.
Oh.
And, you know, driving around trying to find a charger in the dark. You know,
right.
And, you know, these things never have any signage or, you know, most of the time don't have any lights around them. You know, they might be sitting in the middle of a Walmart parking lot or, you know, something like that or behind a gas station.
You know what I really liked? The Lucid would tell you exactly in the parking lot where the charging station. Like the one, they've gotten better because I remember EA. There was a charging station on the top level of a parking garage, but it just said the parking garage. And so you got there.
Oh my
so
God.
There's like six levels. So I'm like, well, maybe it's in the basement. I'm like, well, I guess I'll go from the bottom up. And I just kept going up and up. And then finally I got to it. And I called EA and I'm like, hey, this is. They're like, oh, what's you know? They call me back. This is before they got overwhelmed. But they're like, oh, what's the problem? Like, you need to tell people where the charging station is. We're like, we didn't know. No, what level and what corner? Even if you just say level 6, northeast corner. That's it. Right. That's all you need to tell people.
So you're at least lapping the right level of the garage.
I'm just going around for like 20 minutes in this garage. Finally, I get to the top and I'm like, okay, well, I guess that makes sense. I don't know.
What I've found with EA, like the Electrify America app, is supported in Android Automotive and Android Auto, I should say. So if you have your phone connected to the car, you can, and you're using Google Maps and, you know, listening to something, you can go to the EA app and it will find the chargers for you, and it'll show you, like you said, you know, it'll show you the address, you know, or, you know, it's in this parking garage. But in the Android Auto interface, that's all it shows you. It doesn't show you those details. But if you actually pick up your phone and look in the app itself, in the app, it does give you those details on the phone. But for whatever reason, they don't display that on the screen when you're using Android Auto. And I'm not sure about with iPhones how they do it. I'll have to try that out next time.
Get it together.
Yeah. It's a pain, and all the charging companies need to do better.
Yeah.
ChargePoint's the same way. I've had the same experience with ChargePoint, where you can look it up in Android Auto with the ChargePoint app, and it'll tap on one, and it'll add that to your Google Maps navigation, and it'll guide you there, but it won't tell you which level it's on unless you actually look in the app. I had the exact same experience with that one.
Yeah.
I think the Mercedes ones does that as well, where it tells you exactly in the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
I think because I was oh, finally people are fixing this, where I don't have to like drive around a parking lot.
Isn't it weird though? Doesn't it seem like such an obvious thing? I mean, you know where your charger is, you know it's there. Like, how hard it seems like that would be one of those things that somebody in development would be like, hey guys, maybe we should give them a little more of a hint than in this 10-story garage. Good luck. Like, can't we tell them something?
Yeah, we were doing the video shoot with the Lucid Air, and there was a charging station at a Safeway, which And it tells you like what lane to go down inside the parking, inside the, the drive. It was just a parking lot. It wasn't like a, but it's like, oh, go over here. Now take a right here. Because sometimes you see them off in a distance. You're like, oh, I'll go down this lane. And you're like, nope, wrong lane, sucker. And you're like, ah.
It's like a maze. You're like, oh, shoot, dead end. No, wait, right. No, I'm okay. I'm getting closer. I that can one was, see it.
That one was, they only had like three stations though. And that one was full. And we're like, boo. Same. You got to put more stations up. And it was an old legacy station though. So. More stations.
More stations.
Charging. More reliable stations.
Yeah, mostly more reliable that.
Doesn't help if the stations are there and they're not working.
How about just existing stations reliable? Even that would be an improvement.
That station had a Rivian and a F-150 Lightning. And then a Kona EV.
That's quite the assortment of EVs.
Yeah, well, that one's in Marin, so that's the other. The one with all 350s, there was an EV6, Ioniq 5, and a Polestar all in a row. And then me and the Lucid Air.
Nice. Very fair.
Yeah, it was again, I live in Northern California, so.
Yeah. Well, I've been surprised. Here in Southeast Michigan, I've been seeing more and more EVs of all different brands, not just, Ford and GM, but. Seeing a lot more Lucid Airs. I've seen several Lucid Airs, but also seeing a lot more Rivians, a lot of VW ID4s, a lot of Ioniq 5s and EV6s and Kona EVs. They're becoming more and more common all the time. There's definitely a lot of them around. And
save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. I also had an Ioniq 5 over the past week.
Dun, dun, dun.
And,
segue.
I specifically asked for this one from Drive Shop, because of the weather forecast that was, a combination of two things. The weather forecast that was coming through for extremely cold weather just ahead of Christmas. And also my local EA station just came back online a couple weeks ago after they did a rip and replace of the old legacy chargers that they had there. So they had six chargers at this site, not far from my house. They left the one that had the CHAdeMO connector on it, which is what they're doing at all their sites. So they're leaving the old chargers with the CHAdeMO because the new chargers are not supporting CHAdeMO at all. And then the other five are brand new chargers, all 350 kilowatt chargers with the hypercharging label on them.
Hyper.
So you know that it's the best. And
like a child with a Red Bull and Ultra. A candy.
I like hyper. I like that label, hypercharging. Yeah.
Better screens on there, definitely a lot easier to read. When I got the Ioniq 5, this was as this big winter storm last week was coming through across much of the middle part of the country. We actually didn't get a whole lot of snow here, but we did get high winds, like 50-mile-an-hour winds, and the temperatures got down into the low single digits here. For a number of days. And so I went out and the morning after the car was delivered, it was when I left the house here, it was, I think, 5 or 6 degrees. The storm had started, the storm had happened. And where I had the car parked in the driveway, the driver's side of the car was facing the direction the wind was coming from. And when I walked out, we didn't get a whole lot of snow. We got a little bit of snow. But when I walked out, the Ioniq 5, like the EV6, has these door handles that pivot. You know, they are hinged, and they you know, if you have the higher end trim levels, they're powered so that as you approach with the key fob, they're supposed to pop out from the door.
Did not.
And it was frozen. It did not pop out from the door. So I had to press on it, you know, and manually force it open. And it was so cold that when I got in the car and pulled the door shut, you know, it stuck open. It would,
oh, geez.
It couldn't latch the door.
That's why I don't like the fancy opening. I just want a door handle.
Yes. Make it simple.
Make it simple.
We need things that don't freeze.
Yes.
Like, there's cold weather places. Make things work in cold weather or make them easier.
Yeah.
Like, this is so fancy. Give that one to Robbie. Give Sam and I one.
I don't want the fancy door. I don't want a door that, like, oh, man, I just want, like, a regular, like, reach underneath, pull it, and it opens. That's it. I don't need it. It doesn't need to be electronic. It just needs something that you, like your hand does, and it makes it happen, and that's it. It's one less thing it's going to break. If you're like, well, you got to put a servo, and then it has to come out, and then, you know, it has to be part of this, and like, oh, nope, never mind, froze.
And you wonder why we have a chip shortage.
Done.
You know, doors like that,
right.
Each one of those doors has got a little ECU in there with
think
chips
how
in
many,
it.
We'd have so much better car availability if we could just open all our doors like normal.
Yeah, just regular, it's the same thing with the charging port doors. I wrote a whole article about how I'm sick of, like, magic doors that open. I'm like, no, because my gas door, the door to the gas
just
tank.
Press it and it pops open. And,
press it and pop. That's all you need. Yeah.
No, nothing fancy. Just make the doors open. Just chill out, everybody.
So without preconditioning the car, you know, as you said, Robbie, you know, I just got in and drove. You know, starting when I left the house, it was about 5 degrees outside, 5 degrees Fahrenheit, that is. So it was a wee bit chilly out. You know, turned on the heat, turned on the seat heaters and the heated steering wheel, which are definitely a must have if you're going to get an EV. Heated seats and heated steering wheel. Definitely makes it a lot more comfortable in there. And just went out and started driving my usual loop that I do for, you know, for evaluating range and fuel economy. And it's a mixed loop, you know, about a 35-mile loop of, you know, some highway, some kind of suburban highway, like 45, 55-mile-per-hour roads, some suburbs and urban stop-and-go driving. So it's a good, pretty good general mix. And in the past, when I've driven the IONIQ 5 or the EV6 on that same loop, I've gotten about 3.3, 3.4 miles per kilowatt hour. At 6 or 7 degrees Fahrenheit, I did the loop a couple of times and averaged 1.8 miles per kilowatt hour.
Woo!
Which is pretty low. I mean, yeah, these Hyundai Motor Group vehicles, the EGMP platform, they do have a heat pump climate control system, which is definitely more efficient, but it, you know, it still takes a fair bit of energy when it's that cold. It takes quite a bit of energy to heat, to get the cabin to a comfortable temperature. And it's not like I was cranking it to, you know, 75 degrees. You know, I had it at, I think, 65 or 66.
A reasonable, I live in Michigan, I can tolerate a little chill.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, drove it around for a couple hours like that, averaged about 1.8. As it got closer, you know, closer to about 7 or 8 degrees, you know, as I went on, you know, it crept up to about 1.9 miles per kilowatt hour, which, you know, is not bad. I mean, I worked it out, you know, it would have worked out, you know, on a full charge, I could have gotten about 160, 165 miles of range, at, you know, driving in those conditions. And the IONIQ 5 I had was the all-wheel drive limited, so it had the big wheels, the extended range battery, all-wheel drive, 320 horsepower, and it's rated at 253 miles of range under nominal conditions. Yeah. So it lost about a third of its range, which is about what I would expect under these kinds of conditions.
So the moral of the story is, if you get a car with a heat pump, is that you precondition it before you get in.
Actually,
any EV, any plug-in vehicle, not just battery electrics, but also plug-in hybrids, because you can do this with a plug-in hybrid as well, because they have electric heating systems. You know, if you're driving it in the wintertime, you know, program in what time you plan to leave, you know, leave it plugged in, and, you know, half hour or so, 20 minutes or so before your programmed time, it will actually turn on the climate control system and it will warm up the cabin while it's attached to the heater, or while it's attached to your charger. So it's not using any of the charge from the battery to do this.
Oh, I'm talking about preconditioning the battery. That way, once you get in the battery, you'll get more range.
Yeah, it'll do that too. So, you should definitely do that as well. So, definitely keep the car plugged in if you can, whether it's a plug-in hybrid or battery electric, so you get the most out of the battery that you possibly can. After driving around for a couple of hours, I went into the nav system, the built-in nav system, programmed it to go to my EA station, because part of what I wanted to do is try out the new EA chargers. And I had the preconditioning turned on, and I did this when I was about 25, 30 minutes away from the charger. And using the battery preconditioning does take a little bit of energy from the battery. So you do lose a little bit of range, but you're only talking a few miles. So unless you're really on the edge, you should be fine. I got to the charger, to the EA station, with about 6% state of charge.
Living on the edge.
Wow. Yeah.
Preconditioned the battery. It was up to about 7 degrees Fahrenheit at this point.
Oh, balmy.
plugged it in. It all worked. Sat in the car and watched. And it did eventually get up to – it peaked – at about 156 kilowatts charging rate. So even with preconditioning, when it's that cold, you're probably still not going to get full maximum charging speed. I mean, with an EV6 before and with the Ioniq, I have gotten upwards, between 230 and 240 kilowatts charging rate. Still, at 155, 156 kilowatts, it's still charging at a pretty fast pace.
Yeah.
It did work. The new chargers, worked flawlessly first time out.
It's tough to do with the charging, because you never know how much of it is the car versus how much it is the charging station, how much it is the weather. And you're just I always have to end up having to take it with a grain of salt, because I'm like, well, this car's supposed to charge at this speed.
And it also depends on your initial state of charge, too.
Yeah, the SF, yes. Because, I had that Lucid Air, and I was trying to get video of it, charging really quickly. And we'd driven it, probably 100 miles, but it was still, at 78% capacity. There's not enough. I put it in sprint mode, or no, what's the one above sprint? There's sport mode, and I was on the freeway just slamming on the accelerator, trying to use up energy, so when I got to it, I could at least get video of it going faster than 80% or 87 kilowatts, which is what I ended up getting, because the state of charge was so high. It's like, what are you doing?
This is one of the other challenges with trying to educate people about charging, because you go to a gas station, it doesn't matter if your car's got an eighth of a tank of gas in it or 7/8 of a tank of gas in it, it's still going to pump gas at the same rate, whether it's 5 degrees or 85 degrees. Yep. You're still going to get, 2-3 gallons a minute, 5 gallons a minute, whatever the rate that is pumping, it's going to be the same all the time. And that's not true for EVs. It is going to vary depending on the ambient temperature, your initial state of charge, all these variables.
It's an algebra thing.
Yeah.
It's higher really math. You have to be an engineer to figure it out, which is why Sam figures it all out.
That's what I got Sam on.
I did go back a few days later when the battery was about 60% state of charge, I think, and plugged it in. And it was warmer that day. It was up into the 20s that day. And, starting from about 60% state of charge, it got up to about 87 kilowatts, which, at that state of charge, it's actually pretty decent. It's still nowhere near the peak that you're going to get with that car under ideal conditions. There were a few other foibles. I still really like the Ioniq 5 and the EV6 and the GV60, but under these cold weather conditions, I did notice a few other issues. One of the things I've noticed on a number of EVs, not just this one. I know the Cadillac Lyriq has this. I think the Mach-E is another one. These cars are all, crossovers. They tend to have, fairly sloped rear window glass. And the manufacturers have opted not to include a rear wiper on these things. Mm. In part, I think, to save money and cost, but also for aerodynamic reasons. Because when you've got that wiper sitting there, you don't get as clean airflow off the back of the tailgate. And so the IONIQ 5, like many of these others, does not have a rear wiper. And while it does have a, rear defogger built into the glass, so it gets rid of the snow and ice. And it's got that spoiler on the top of the rear hatch, and there's a couple of slots in there, and the airflow is supposed to, when you're driving in the rain, for example, it actually does a pretty good job. The airflow management, blows the water off of there. So it actually keeps the rear window pretty clear in rain. But in conditions like this where you've got salt spray coming up, as you're driving down the road, the salt spray gets swirled up behind the back of the car. And after doing my test loop, I looked in the rearview mirror and realized I could not see anything at all out of the rear window.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, because there is, when you're driving in places where there's salt on the roads, that coats the bejesus out of your car. Like, mm-hmm. you'll go through a ton of washer fluid, and it doesn't matter how aerodynamic things are. If your rear window on something that is ever so slightly sloped does not have a wiper, you're not going to be able to see anything.
Yep.
I think you're one of like a bunch of people who have complained about this. I'm guessing that they're probably going to add one in the next year.
I hope so.
I feel like enough people have complained about it. I've heard like journalists are complaining about it, some other people, because it's ridiculous that it doesn't. I mean, my little Kona has it, and it's
great. Is it from, as an engineer, put on your engineering man hat, Sam, is it that significant a difference in terms of the aerodynamics, like that big of an impact to have a wiper? Like, is it that horrible?
I haven't talked to Hyundai about this, but I know last year when I was going through a deep dive on the Cadillac Lyriq with the designers, the Lyriq designers at the GM Tech Center, we were there with the car, and I had noticed at the time that it didn't have a rear wiper on there, and I asked about that, and they said that, it does make a notable difference. And, with EVs in particular, they are really concerned about the aero because they're trying to maximize, what you don't want is when you lift off the accelerator, you don't want the air slowing the car down. You want to be able to let the regenerative braking do all of that slowing of the vehicle. So you can recapture as much energy back into the battery. Air flowing over the car is not going to put energy back into the battery. It's just going to slow you down. And so they want it to be as slick as possible. And that rear edge, if you look at most relatively modern vehicles, you look around the back of the car, you'll notice a lot of little details. Like, you'll notice like little ridges sometimes, like on the back corners near the rear bumper, and the way that the tailgate, at the point where the glass meets the tailgate, those edges, they actually spend a shocking amount of time in the wind tunnel tweaking those edges to manage the way the airflow is breaking away from the back of the car, because it's almost actually more important than the air flowing over the top of the vehicle around the sides, but actually the rear edge, the way the air breaks away from the rear edge of the vehicle, managing that, because otherwise if you don't, you get this turbulence behind the car that basically creates a low pressure area behind the car that actually sucks it backwards.
Like a sail.
Literally sucks it backwards.
Okay.
Especially at highway speeds. Yeah. And like something like putting a wiper blade, a wiper arm, on that rear edge does make a notable difference in that aerodynamics.
Interesting.
Right at that spot.
Okay. I was curious. I mean, because if they're not including it, a lot of them, I'm like, it must make a difference. But mm-hmm. I appreciate that explanation, engineering man. Thank you.
You're welcome. So the Ioniq 5 all-wheel drive limited that I had in the cyber gray, which is my least favorite color of what they offer on that, came to a grand total of $53,895, including destination.
All-wheel drives, long battery. All right,
yeah, which is, you know, it's not bad. You know, I mean, it's not. It's you know, it's about almost twice as much as the most expensive car I've ever purchased. But you know, it's a really nice car. I really like the Ioniq 5. And the EV6 and GV60. You know, my wife and I were going out for lunch in this thing, and you know, she was commenting on it. She's like me, or she more so than me, you know, she's not particularly enthused with the shape of it, but she liked riding in it, liked the interior of it a lot. And I think, you know, if we were to buy, you know, I mean, when we replace our Civic, our 2017 Civic, you know, we were talking about this, you know, we will almost certainly replace it with an EV. And right now, you know, I'm leaning towards the EV6 and she, you know, she also prefers the EV6 look to this one. But, you know, that's why you have multiple brands with different designs. Because, you know, some people like this one better, some people like the other one. You get all the same goodness regardless of which one you get.
You're both dead to me. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. Let's discuss a few of the news items from this week. Speaking of EVs... the IRS put out a couple of press releases the other day, and when they passed the Inflation Reduction Act this summer, part of that law was, you know, it directed the IRS to issue guidance to automakers by the end of this year, you know, on how to do the calculations for the battery content for the new clean vehicle credits. They did not finish their work.
I didn't finish my taxes, I would get in trouble. I'm just saying, yeah. If I didn't do it in time.
Do we get to charge them a fee?
I mean, you know, if you don't file your taxes on time, you have to pay a penalty. And so the IRS is playing fair. They are paying a penalty for not getting their work done in time.
You got to make a point. That's a good point.
In this case, in this one rare instance with the IRS, it goes both ways, you know. And so since they did not finish their work yet on that, what they decided to do was at least through the first quarter of 2023, so starting January 1st through March 31st, they are not going to take into account where the battery materials came from. They're not going to calculate the domestic battery content for at least the first 3 months of the year. So for any EV built in North America, so in Canada, US or Mexico, they will be eligible for the full $7,500 tax credit.
Boom.
As long as you also meet the income requirements, you know, so the income requirements and the price caps are still there. It's the only the battery content requirements are being waived for the time being.
You can't be rich.
Yeah. So $55,000 for cars, $80,000 for trucks, SUVs, and vans is the price cap for the MSRP. And this was an interesting thing. I was reading through the fact sheet on this. You know, one of the questions in the FAQ that they published was, if the manufacturer is offering a discount or, you know, even if it's the other way, you know, if there are some additional costs, like for example, say a dealer markup, you know,
no one does that, they
calculate this based purely on what the published MSRP is on the window sticker. So if the MSRP is $54,995, and the dealer says, well, if you want this car, you've got to pay me an extra $10,000. You still qualify for the tax credit.
That's good-ish.
That's goodish. No.
Well, it's good because you're getting, I mean, you can still get, but also it doesn't, like, it, I feel like you should.
But tell. I think a lot of dealers are going to be.
They're going to be jerks, you know, about saying, it.
Well, you know, you're going to get $7,500 back on this, so why don't we split it? You know, give me $3,750 of that.
Why don't we split it?
So there's that, you know, and then there's also the income caps. So for single filers, it's $150,000. If you're married filing jointly, it's $300,000. So if you make more than that, then you will not qualify for the tax credits. If you less than that, then you're good.
You're doing fine. You're doing all right.
You don't need it.
You're fine. Good for you.
Unless you live in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing fine. I lived in San Francisco. We made far less than that. We were fine.
Okay. All right. So that's the clean vehicle tax credit. So if you're interested in buying an EV or a plug-in hybrid, and you're not sure if it's going to qualify based on the battery content, as long as it's at least assembled in North America. Go out there, you know, after January 1st and get something, you know, if you can find something, at least, anyway.
Yeah. You can buy one if you can find one.
Yeah, and then you'll be able to get the $7,500.
But there's also a thing now where if you lease the car instead of buying it, mm-hmm. you can get the $7,500 credit for cars built outside the U.S.
No, that's only for commercial vehicles.
But you can use the commercial vehicle tax credit.
Right, but that only applies to vehicles that are over 14,000 pounds gross vehicle weight. So, like, that's, you know, if you're buying, you know, like a big heavy-duty Sprinter or something like that, like a dually Sprinter, it doesn't apply to light-duty vehicles.
I'm reading an article that makes it seem like it does.
No, I read through it. The clean vehicle tax... The commercial vehicle credit is only for vehicles over 14,000 pounds.
All right.
I'll trust you, Sam. We can argue about it later.
Right. We can talk about it later. Yeah.
All right. Or, you know, anybody, you know, if you want to spend a few hours reading through the Internal Revenue Code and try to figure it out.
Ooh, that sounds super exciting.
If you want to read through that and... Sadly, I have spent way more time this year doing that than I would ever want to. But if you want to correct me, I'm happy to be corrected. But for at least my reading of it was that it's only for medium and heavy duty vehicles.
The only time I've ever read the tax code was in college to pass my accounting class to get my degree. And I just remember it being this gigantic paper
class.
Thing. No, I had to take this one. I was limited in what I could take to fit my schedule. And I remember that it was like a gazillion pages long. And the paper was like that really thin rice paper. Like if you flip the pages too fast, you would rip the It was the most miserable class. I'm like, why would anyone do this? I don't get it. Accountants, I appreciate you. I don't know how you do what you do. It's madness. Madness.
It is. It absolutely is madness. And yeah. I only spent time reading one, you know, or a couple of sections of the code, you know, trying to figure out the clean vehicle credits for a report that we were writing.
Can you imagine having to know the whole code? Is what you do. And it sounds like I'm mocking accounts. I'm like,
I would rather be homeless than work at the tax
account. I just don't know how they do it. It's so complicated and so convoluted. I guess if it's your thing, it's your thing. And thank you, accountants of the world, especially April's not that far away. Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. Tax time's coming.
All right. Another semi-EV related thing, not directly related, but California passed a new law that says that you cannot sell something that is labeled as full self-driving unless it is actually, you know, capable of driving itself without human supervision. So this is going to be an interesting one to watch in the coming weeks because Tesla definitely sells full self-driving capability, even though the cars are nowhere even remotely close to being able to operate themselves without a human driver behind the wheel ready to take control at any moment when it does the worst possible thing at the worst time. We'll see how this plays out in California. Whether Tesla rebrands it. There was an interesting tweet I saw that that came out. Tesla tweeted some of their highlights from 2020 or from 2022, and they acknowledged that in North America they have sold 285,000 vehicles with full self-driving. So 285,000 customers, which
the thing called full self-driving.
Yes.
Well, really, the name confuses people, and the names of lots of safety tech confuses people. Like the number of times when I talk to just the average Joe who doesn't quite understand what that piece of, common, what we think of, the three of us think of as really common stuff does, and it confuses people. I think having clear names and more consistent names for stuff that more accurately reflect what the things do across the board is not a bad idea. I don't know how many if they change the name of it, people I think will be slightly less confused if it doesn't say full self-driving, but I'm willing to bet there's still a large number of people are going to think it does. People tend to always think these things do more than they do. They give things more credit than they should, regardless of what the tech is.
Every time I wrote a Tesla article about reviewing anything having to do with a Tesla, I would always get somebody emailing me to yell at me to tell me that it's a self-driving car. Because I would say in the video or in the article, it's not a self-driving car. It is a, it's a driver's assistance. It's not autonomous. It is a driver's assistance system. You are still in charge. And I would get people emailing me, it's self-driving.
Well, and you see, like, the other automakers have really doubled down on the fact, like, do you remember, like, go back in the back in the few years past, where they don't say, nothing says self-driving anywhere, not even like partial self-driving. Everything says driver assist. And they made a big point at one point of switching all that terminology to make sure that it was, here's our driver assistance features. Here's our driver assistance. They made a big thing about
Mercedes
changing
did this
that over.
Once. I think when the previous generation E-Class, when they launched it, their driver assist system, they ran an ad that actually referred to it as autonomous.
Yeah, they don't want to save it anymore.
And within a couple of days, they pulled the ad after getting a lot of blowback because it wasn't. It wasn't autonomous. It was an assist feature.
They're trying. They all decided driver assist is a much more accurate word, and it probably is. But I still wonder how much driver assist. But when you read the names of the features in the driver assist system, they can be confusing. There's a lane keeping an assist and a lane keeping warning. And what's the difference? Like the average person gets a little confused by what those different things mean. And it is confusing.
You also have the issue of, every manufacturer uses their own branding for the same functionality.
I typically don't even mention the branding anymore because it doesn't
I don't either. If they have a name, I'll say Kia's popping in my head right now. They have DriveWise is Kia's thing. But then when I list all the things, I tend to use the same normal words for things, their
adaptive
fancy
cruise
trait.
Control.
Adaptive
cruise control.
It's a little easier.
Radar cruise control, intelligent speed control, intelligent cruise control, smart cruise control. All of these are exactly the same thing.
Right.
Adaptive cruise control, done, across the board.
It's confusing. It was once upon a time they were all trying to come up with their word for thing. It was we have this cool feature. We're trademarking this cool name because we're doing it. It's now everybody's doing it and everybody's trademarked a name and we are all confused. It'd be nice to just, I get it. You want to show that you all do it and I get where it started, but it's just led to this alphabet soup of descriptions for various driver assistance technologies. It is horrifically confusing for the average consumer.
Yeah. Yeah. So they need to standardize the branding for these functions, and not have unique branding for every manufacturer. Yeah.
We have an accelerator. We have the gas maker go faster, and we have the
everybody has to have their own word for
turn
things.
Signal.
Turn signal. Indicator.
Yeah. When we have to look it up, I have to occasionally look it up. I'm like, wait, what is that one? That one means that for this brand, and that one means that for that brand. It's silly.
And if you're looking through the owner's manual, we're in kind of a weird position because we're driving different stuff every week. But if you're looking for how to enable or disable something in the owner's manual, it's like, well, what is this company calling it? Because you don't even know what to look for.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're like, which of the 20 possible descriptors they could use for this? Is this what they call it? And you're like, nope, it wasn't in the A's. Nope, not in the B's. Not like you're literally having to go through the entire thing. It's like when you're a kid and your parents say, look that up, like how to spell something. And you're like, if you could look it up in a dictionary, if I knew how it started to spell it, I wouldn't need to look it up. I don't even know how to start this word. Yeah. Like when I was a kid, tsunami, I didn't know how to spell tsunami and I was told to look it up. And I'm like, there's nothing in under S and it starts with a T. Like, don't know. Yeah. Everything's a tsunami. All these words are like tsunami. Yeah. Like,
it why does psychology start with a P?
Yeah. Right. And it's that way with this driver assist. Like, I don't understand why they call this thing for this company and this thing for the other company. And it leaves me confused with a dictionary in my hand, unable to figure out what's what.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. What else? Oh, coming up next week, the CES is happening in Las Vegas. Woo-hoo! I will be there.
Have fun, Sam.
Oh, good luck.
Yeah.
I'll be here in my house drinking my tea and in my jammies.
I'll be running around from meeting to meeting all week long. But on Thursday afternoon, Stellantis is doing a big keynote. So if you're in Vegas at CES, that'll be at the Venetian Ballroom. And among other things, they will be revealing the Ram 1500 Revolution concept. And this is a preview of what to expect from the 2024 Ram 1500 EV, which may or may not be called Revolution, Ram 1500 Revolution. We'll see. But it will at least be a battery electric pickup truck. We've known that was coming for about a year and a half ago when Stellantis did their EV day last year. Mm-hmm. But the guys at Autoblog found an interesting, Jonathan Ramsey actually found the trademark application from Stellantis for the Ram 1500 Rev, which could be, referring to the Revolution. It could be the whole EV, or it could also be the range extended version that they hinted at during that EV day last year, which would actually is more likely what it is, I think, is probably the range extended version. And this could actually be the thing that gives Ram a real advantage over the competition in the electric pickup truck market. Doing some sort of range extended electric pickup, the biggest issue we've seen with these electric pickups is if you want to tow any significant distance, when you're towing, your efficiency goes way, way, way down. And so you lose a lot of range. And this is true with gas trucks too. But it's particularly problematic with electric trucks. And for now, Ram isn't giving us any details on exactly what kind of configuration this is going to have. But it looks like they are moving forward with some sort of range extended version of the Ram.
That'll be cool. I think it's a good thing. I'm curious to see what this will be.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Last news item from the drive. It's a reminder to not overload your truck. Don't put too much payload on there.
I just clicked on that link. Oh my God, that hurts my head seeing that image.
Yeah, the lead image on this is a Ram 3500 crew cab dually with a big camper on the back.
This is horrifying.
And it's snapped in half, basically. The frame snapped on this thing.
Oh my gosh.
And the owner of this truck, apparently driven about 25,000 miles with this thing, with the Eagle Cap 1165 on his Ram 3500 dually. When they took it in for repairs, the dealer said this is not covered under warranty, wanted $17,000 to repair this, because basically it looks like they're going to have to replace the entire frame. So there's some uncertainty here. The owner says that the payload capacity on the truck should be about 7,800 pounds. The camper weighs about 5,000 pounds empty, and fully loaded estimated it's about 6,500 pounds. But the thing you need to remember when you're looking at specs for trucks, you know, and this applies to cars and SUVs as well, you know, oftentimes manufacturers will mix and match different specs. Like, for example, you know, I'll use Tesla as an example. You know, they often, you know, you look at the Tesla website and it'll say 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, range 400 miles. And yes, you can get a Tesla Model S that will go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, and you can get a Tesla Model S that'll go 400 miles, but they're not the same vehicle. Mm-hmm. You know, and with trucks, especially, because trucks have so many different configurations, like regular cabs, extended cabs, crew cabs, single wheel axles, dualies, you know, different trim levels, different tire and wheel sizes. You have to look at the specifics for the exact configuration of truck that you are driving to figure out what is the actual payload and towing capacity. You know, so there's, you know, pickup trucks that will tow, you know, 11 or 12,000 pounds, or in the case of these heavy duty trucks, you know, might tow, you might, there's configurations that'll tow 30,000 pounds. And there's also configurations that may have a 2,000 pound payload or a 7,800 pound payload, but they're not always the same truck.
I feel like you're going to tow, especially something like this, if you're going to put this, or I guess it's payload, not towing, but if you're going to put this on a, you're going to do this kind of heavy duty stuff with your truck. I feel like it's sort of like really look at exactly the configuration you got. Like, I think that's like a, like I would feel like I would want to make sure like, okay, I got A, B, C, D, and F. What does that do for my truck? Well, if I change this one thing, what does that do for my truck? Like, you have to be, and when you look at this, I'm looking at the horrifying picture that's the lead image. This thing is pretty loaded down, because if you look, it looks like there's a little motorcycle on the back of it almost. There's there's a set of, at least one set of Max tracks on the roof, it looks like. Like, these people are doing some off-roading at some point when they take this cab off, so, or take this thing off the payload. So it's, there's a lot of weight on this vehicle. There's a lot on here.
Yeah, in the article, they, you know, they look at some stuff. Like, for example, you know, for a 2020 Ram 3500, there is a configuration with a 7,680-pound payload, which should have been able to support this cab, this camper. But that is a regular cab long bed with two-wheel drive and the gas V8. From the photos here, we know that this is a dually four-wheel drive with the Cummins diesel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while they don't know the precise configuration of everything on this truck, just from that alone, the 4x4 diesel dually has a max payload of 5,850 pounds, which means that this thing almost certainly was overloaded by probably at least 1,000 pounds.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Plus, if you, I mean, look at the camper. It's, there's so much weight on the back end.
Yeah.
So you're essentially, it's like a lever. You're like,
Whoop,
just trying. Yeah.
Like, if you put, like, if I, like, let's say I have a, you know, something that I put weight right on top of it, it's fine. But if I put weight over here, it's going to eventually.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you look at this, it's pretty amazing. He's, the owner had told the guy who interviewed him from the drive that he's had that camper on there for 25,000 miles across Rocky Mountains, Pacific Northwest, and Baja. That thing was, what a champ that it managed that before it finally said, you know what, I'm done. Snap.
Yeah, it says at one point, Pavel says he noticed a creaking sound coming from underneath the truck. He inspected the shocks and springs, but couldn't find an issue. So he and his wife continued to their designated camping spot. It was days later, on a 2.5-day drive north, that the frame split. They were roughly 100 miles from the U.S. border. I guess they were in Baja, California, in Mexico.
In Mexico.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I feel bad for them, but I also have that sense of, like, come on, you're going to weigh something down that much. You got to know what your truck can carry, people.
Yeah. So, yeah, take care. You know, if you think you're going to be anywhere near the limits of what your vehicle can do, you know, make sure you check out, make sure you verify what those limits are and try not to go over them. This is why, you know, one of the best features on the latest generation Ford F-Series trucks is the load sensors that are built in under the bed and in the hitch, you know, so you can actually weigh, you know, how much stuff you're putting in there. And, you know, the truck is programmed from the factory with whatever its maximum payload is. So you'll see on the screen in the truck as you load it up, you'll see what the maximum is that that truck can support. And as you load it up, you'll see the bar going up, getting closer and closer to that, which is, it's pretty cool. It's a nice feature to have. And I think you know, every manufacturer should be doing this.
That is a really good feature.
Yeah.
But then still the moral is there's engineers. There's very many Sams out there engineering this stuff. So pay attention to the numbers they tell you your truck can carry.
There's always someone who's like, why is this thing not working the way?
Because the engineers said it wouldn't work that way.
All right. Let's answer a few listener questions. And this one came from the Discord. If you're a patron, we appreciate you. Thank you very much for your support. And you can, you know, if you want to join the Discord, just shoot me a note and I'll send you the link for that. Dave Wengier, sorry if I mispronounced the last name, or I'm not sure if it's Wengier, or however. David asks, when cars have GPS and nav, why don't they use that info to correct for speedometer error when it's available? Might not always be available, but surely any little bit helps. Using Waze, it's clear that my speedometer is about 5 kilometers an hour, about 3 miles an hour off, and I know all of the reasons that can be, which is why GPS seems like an obvious answer. In principle, it would seem like an obvious answer. In reality, it's maybe not so much. GPS, different GPS receivers, the GPS software can have errors of its own built in. So the calculations, may not necessarily be accurate, especially if you're driving in an urban area. It can be really inaccurate because of the way GPS works. You've got these signals from multiple satellites that are time synced when they leave the satellite. The system triangulates from the time difference when it hits your receiver to figure out exactly where you are, to calculate where you are, which is a really cool solution, except that if you're in an urban area and those signals are bouncing off buildings a couple of times, which is why if you've ever tried to use nav in an urban canyon, you'll find that a lot of times it'll say you're 3 blocks away from where you actually are. Because every time it bounces off a building, it takes longer for that signal to get from the satellite to your GPS antenna. So the signal's off.
It also, I run into this in Boston all the time. It can't tell quite whether I'm on the surface road or the tunnels underneath.
Yep.
So it literally thinks I'm up on the surface and it's telling me to take a left. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm in a tunnel and there is no left. So that how
not
far
with
down
that attitude.
Yeah. Not with that attitude. But so like this, so there's things that will make that wrong,
And, there's a lot of stuff, that, for example, you're not allowed to, the same calculations that are used to calculate, your speed are also used to run your odometer. Modern vehicles have electronic odometers, and the odometer is supposed to be tamper-proof, so there's not supposed to be anything adjusting it. So whatever is in there from the factory kind of needs to stay there, for your odometer and your speedometer. Even if it's off by a little bit, it needs to be consistent. If vehicles are constantly adjusting themselves, there may be some legal issues. I'm not 100% certain on that, but there may be some regulatory issues involved with, making adjustments like that impact the odometer. And certainly, things like, warranties that are based on how many miles you've got on the vehicle.
Oh, that you could technically be falsifying your mileage even if you were correcting for an honest reason like that.
Yeah. So in theory, it's a good idea. In principle, it's a little, as always in engineering, it's more complicated.
I wonder if you had like two different Waze apps running on your car, if those would line up exactly. Because I feel like they would probably be a little bit off.
Now we have to do that.
Now
we got to try it from two different phones.
New next drive programs. Yeah, pull up two different phones, pull up Waze, put the same destinations in, set them like next to each other in the car or whatever.
Watch them battle it out.
battle it out. See, yeah, see, yeah. It's a good question.
Okay,
Thunderdome.
Let's answer David Levine's question first. Then, David asks, "Thanks for providing hours of commuting enjoyment. You have mentioned on the show that Tesla is ramping up FSD to more owners. I believe, like you, that this is to book the income. We know that FSD doesn't follow the car to the next owner. How does Tesla handle the purchases of FSD that they collected from cars that that were sold, but that FSD was never delivered on? Do they just eat the dollars? How does Tesla claim the income for something that was never delivered to the purchaser during their ownership?" That's a really good question. So just to clarify for everybody, you know, when these vehicles were sold with FSD to begin with, over the last 6 years, up until the point that Tesla actually started delivering that functionality to customers, they couldn't book the revenue as automotive revenue. They booked it as cash. So they had the cash in their bank account, but they couldn't count it towards their revenues. It's what's known as deferred revenue, and they can only add it to their revenue line at the point when they actually deliver that feature, and then it gets added into their profits or losses, and so for most of the last 6 years, most of the people that paid for FSD never getting that feature, that money went to Tesla, anywhere from $3,000 to $15,000. Tesla got that money; they have it, but they couldn't book it as revenue. I think, and again, I'm not an accountant here. If there's somebody out there who's an accountant, that
I know someone who took a class. I know someone who took a class.
Yeah, you took an accounting class.
I took one whole class.
Or actually, I took Econ 101. Sorry, I didn't take accounting.
I failed Econ 101, but go ahead.
Never mind.
If there's anybody in the audience that can chime in on this, please, let us know, feedback at wheelbearings.media. But I think what happens is, for those cars that may have already gone out of service, or the customers, like our friend Leo Laporte, used to have a Tesla Model X, turned it in at the end of the lease. He had paid for FSD when he got it, never got that functionality. Tesla got the money. It counts towards their cash on hand that they have, their working capital, but not as revenue. So I think that it just stays that way. It stays in their bank account, but they can't count it as revenue. But if you know better, please feel free to correct me.
So I wonder if the opening beta to everybody now allows them, because now they're saying, hey, you delivered something, so now we can count that as revenue. So at the end of this quarter, they'll say, oh, we got all this extra revenue, because they're not getting as much revenue from China anymore.
They're not getting as much revenue from China, and it looks like their sales in North America have slowed down in recent months, which is also why they're offering a $7,500 discount until the end of the year. I think you're right. I think that's why they just opened it to everybody, so they could book that revenue. All right. Last item from Dan Vesma. This also, I think from the Discord or maybe from Twitter. Do you guys have any motoring New Year's resolutions?
I don't have a New Year's resolution. I don't do New Year's resolutions as a rule. I don't know. Can I make my resolution drive more cars?
Sure.
That's going to be my resolution.
More cars. All right.
More cars. Also, I need to say before we leave, so I was talking about Great Googly Moogly the other week, and I was like, I think it comes from an ad, and sure enough, this guy, Jake Robb, listener, I want to say a shout out to Jake. He found it. He found the clip, and I now have the clip on my phone where it was, in fact, a guy who paints the end zone at a football game to say chefs. Instead
it
of
was
Chiefs.
A Snickers ad, wasn't it?
A Snickers ad. And at the end, when the guy's like, who are the chefs? And he goes, Great Googly Moogly. That's where it's from. So thank you, Jake Robb.
What about you, Robbie? Resolutions?
I don't typically make resolutions. I guess, I don't know, get rid of the Jaguar. I mean, my wife doesn't like it. I thought about making it into a project car, but I don't have any emotional attachment to it, which means I don't care. If I don't care about the car,
you can make it into a Lemons car.
Yeah,
well,
that would be fun. Yeah, I suppose. Or I could just get rid of it.
He still doesn't have any base. Like, yeah, fine. I could do that guy's neck.
I mean, yeah, I could do a lemon's car with it. It'll be fine. But I just don't care about the car. And if you don't care about something, why are you going to do anything to
get
it?
Get rid of it.
Yeah, so I think that my motoring New Year's resolution is get rid of the Jaguar and ride my Vespa more. How's that?
That's sounds fair. Perfect.
The only resolution I ever make is to I resolve not to make resolutions, and I've never managed to fail on that one.
Good job.
I like that. Good job, Sam.
Batting 1,000.
All right. Well, thanks everyone, and have a happy New Year if you listen to this beforehand, and hope 2023 works out better for everybody.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you all next time.
Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.